Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of Women Veterans Speak today, Monday, March the 28th, here in Philadelphia. Nice, cool day, just a few days into the spring season. We're glad to have you with us today. My name is Kathy Santos, founder of the National Alliance of Women Veterans, headquartered here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I'd like to share with you all of the callers that may desire to call in and share in our format today. The number is 1-310-388-9801. Please call in to our show and discuss with us on the issues. We are expecting some guests, and we're hoping that this will be an interesting discussion. We will also be sharing some information about some events that are local here to Philadelphia and some goings-on in Washington as they deal with the women veterans issues. So we're just glad to have you here, and we look forward to but just a very good program. I'm going to go into a quick break here. Sorry for the such early break, but I just need to attend to something very quickly, and I'll be right back with you. Please stand by. Thank you so much. Pennsylvania. Our guest calling number is 1-310-388-9801. And for those who desire to reach the show after the program, if you're not able to listen right now, we are archived on our website at nawvphilly.com. Thank you so much for joining us. Today, I thought we'd follow up on some of the discussion last week since the disaster in Japan. We are looking forward to a guest who actually is trained and have worked actually in a nuclear plant. And we want to hear some of the professional opinions about what is happening and what are some of the solutions. But first, I want to talk a little bit also about the Libya situation. The question I have been somewhat interested in that is being raised is that did Hillary finally push Obama into action on Libya? And I thought about why that matters. If we are all Americans, if we are all working with and for the same government, why should that question matter? But as I read on a very international website, London Evening Standard, the question being asked, has there been a falling out between President Obama and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton? And I thought, these are the types of problems within our infrastructure of our government that is definitely not needed today. I think that to have those in foreign nations question the relationship between the government that are making some decisions on world affairs, I think that it should raise some question to all Americans. I'm just a little bit concerned about that, and we need to pay attention to how what the perception is of other countries towards us. I think it's important that we know that if a country is sharing on the infrastructure and some problems there, then it would give another country who may be in opposition power over any perceived weaknesses that this country may have. So I think we need to just pay a little bit more attention to what propaganda and what is truth about the relationship between our government and to those who are in power, how they behave on issues that impact Americans, particularly about our administration here in the United States, how they impact Americans and what perception it can send to another country. Because I think any perceived weakness is a disadvantage to our country in our government, particularly with there have been wars in three different countries right now, or we are at ease with so many different countries that we need to know, I think, some idea, have some idea of who the enemy is. And if we are bickering and causing these weaknesses that can give any nation a perceived assumption that there are problems in the infrastructure of our government and the ability for it to govern rationally and, I think, logically, then that should be a concern of all Americans and, in my opinion, the world. America has taken a very strong stance on our nation's security, and we need to be mindful of what message we send. The one thing I did want to talk to you about and with is an individual who is very well versed in the area of nuclear and national security. I was trained in that area doing a national security summit, and I felt that this is a subject that we need to share with our community. So for those who are listening, I would like to invite Louise Hawthorne,
yes,
Black Hawk, into our program, and I'm going to ask that she share with us on her perception and some of her research that she has done with the state of Japan and the nuclear disaster. Black Hawk, are you there?
Yes, hi. How are you doing, Kathy?
I'm fine. I'm just so pleased to have your level of expertise. I just sent out a blog question, and I asked the question, should America should we be minimizing the level of intelligence and professionalism in all of the trained areas of our military, particularly with regard to those who have been trained in nuclear security, chemical and biological warfare, because this is a time where these disasters should raise our awareness of the potential dangers that we're in, but we have trained experts within our military, our United States government. Can we dismiss those individuals who have years of experience? And I want you to talk about, if you can, I let this preface this a little bit. When I was actually doing the summit, involved in the summit, participating in the summit last year on national security and nuclear warfare, it was interesting to me. And the one statement that was made throughout the summit was, if we don't address the issue of nuclear security, then none of these other issues that we complain about matter. So I think we're at a place in our history where we are putting the cart before the horse. We really need to reprioritize what's important, and that the availability and accessibility of plutonium and those things that make up these warheads and nuclear facilities. Can we dismiss the fact that in the event of a disaster, that we have trained individuals who have discharged from the military amongst our civilian population, should we not be giving them a little bit more respect in that they could be very valuable to us one day? So I would like to have our guests kind of expound on this a little bit, and I'm just going to give you a few minutes just to talk just as freely as you'd like as to where you believe the state of Japan is right now and what could be a possible solution from your perspective, and having been experienced in these type of environments, what do you think some of the people that may be workers there, what are some of the experiences that you can imagine is going on right now in those plants or around those plants with the workers, if you will?
Okay, well, in regard to the situation in Japan, frankly, courtesy of my experience dealing with nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons, including nuclear weapons specifically, and yes, I've had several incidences when I've dealt with radiological environment. That is a very, 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 very issue that needs to be of serious concern. First and foremost, one thing that we must realize is that the long-term effects of this contamination, frankly, is worldwide. It's catastrophic. Okay, due to the decay rate that is involved, it's not a matter of hours. It's decades, literally. And once the ecosystem is contaminated with radiological contamination, it does not go away. It affects everything. It affects the food that we eat. It affects the animals. It affects human beings. Because, as you had stated previously, one thing about radiation is it affects the body at the nuclei, at a cell level, which means that your cells they mutate. So the cells that replace are not the same as the ones that they're supposed to replace. So that's just like what happened in Chernobyl. You tend to have deformities, mutated animals, birth defects, a higher cancer rate. And when it gets into your food supply, what happens is what you eat is no longer what is healthy for your body. So your system is continually being poisoned. Insofar as contamination via the air, then you have an inhalation hazard, which leads to things like lung cancer, thyroid cancer, and things of that nature. Now, while we do have protocol, you know, to lessen the severity of these ailments as they occur, you're still going to be sick. Okay? So radiation isn't something that, frankly, we should have never, in my opinion, despite the fact that was one of my jobs in the military, it is really, literally, we are not meant to control that type of. I'm stuttering here because radiation, I've seen the effects of it, and it's devastating. We shouldn't have messed with it from the get-up. And after my experiences, I really think it's a very bad thing to use. Nuclear contamination, and when it comes to a nuclear weapon, there's some places on this earth that literally will never be habitable again, i.e. Chernobyl. Okay? And there's some places, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, there's some places there that still, you cannot inhabit that area again. It doesn't matter how much concrete you put on top of it or whatever. I know they try to mitigate the circumstance. They try to minimize the damage that's done to the earth. But frankly, you can't live there. You can live there if you want to, but you're only going to be able to live there. You're going to live there maybe maximum. Chernobyl right now, the maximum time you're allowed to stay there is approximately one half of an hour. And that's as a tourist attraction. Now it's a tourist attraction. You do have some people that are so daggone, I don't know what you want to call them, I would say stupid, they will pay to go to Chernobyl and walk through that empty power, what's left of it, and leave. But the surrounding area around Chernobyl, guess what? Nothing grows there, and what does grow there is mutated. Radiation, nuclear, is the devastating thing. And for that reason, I really feel that we should be very, 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 we should do all that we can, use all of our resources to assist the Japanese, to assist everybody that's affected in that immediate area. Because, frankly, one thing that we don't understand, yes, the United States military, we have excellent resources. We have military personnel that are experts, and every single one of them that have prior experience that are currently in that field need to be on point. They need to be right there because, to be honest with you, the United States of America, we're the only ones that have the logistical means and the expertise as a group that can assist them and can hopefully try to lessen the impact worldwide. Even when it comes to, okay, let's talk about the water, pumping the seawater into the reactors in an attempt to cool them. There has been a breach in the containment, and there has been a meltdown. That means that that water is now going into the ocean, which means that all that are going to be affected with it. And the water is not usable. It's not fit to drink. So when we talk about, well, we're going to go ahead and they need food and things of that nature, first and foremost, how are you going to deliver it logistically? Because their port is contaminated, so there's no ships that can really offload at the port level. When you deal with transferring the food from a port to the contaminated areas, that vehicle which transports that those rations, that transports those supplies, is now a contaminated vehicle, which means that that vehicle cannot leave that hot zone, okay? Which as a result, means that once that vehicle goes in, it cannot go back to the port. It will contaminate the port. Okay, so logistically, we cannot make delivery of any type of supplies or aid in that regard via sea. It must be airlifted. It must be dropped. Okay, literally, it must be dropped. The only nation that has enough hardened planes and hardened conveyance via air that could deliver it via, you know, parachuting it into a hot zone is the United States of America. And when I see a hardened aircraft, that is an aircraft that can withstand a level of radiation and it will not cause injury to the crew on board. Okay? The hull is hardened so that it's not, radiation is not going to penetrate into the cockpit, into the cabin, into the cargo hold, you know. So basically what you do is this, what we used to call it was sling load operation. You pack it on pallets, you put a parachute on it, you load it on the back of a hardened aircraft, and you fly over the hot zone, and you drop it from a certain height where there is minimal contamination on the plane itself, on the outside, and the people that have to open up that cargo bay and drop, you know, said whatever supplies that are needed are only exposed to airborne contamination for a very short period of time, and then the airplane goes back to wherever it came from, and the outside of the plane is then decontaminated, which means basically sprayed down with the power hose, and then once that is done in mid-flight, then that plane can land safely because now the outside of the plane is clean. That is the only way we're going to be able to deliver any type of any aid whatsoever to individuals that are in that contaminated zone. The plane cannot land. The helicopters cannot land. We must be able to fly over, drop, and then fly back. The United States of America, frankly, is the only nation that has the ability to render that type of assistance. Additionally, the United States of America has the majority of those that are experts in doing that type of operation in a tactical environment. Now, we do have very many people that are highly trained, nuclear physicists and things of that nature, that can go ahead and do all the computer stuff insofar as calculating how to fix the reactors. But when it comes to dealing with the people that need the help, that are going to go hungry, that are going to have to deal with living in a contaminated food and things of that nature, we are the ones that know how to handle it, boots on the ground. So insofar as do military personnel need to be over there from the United States that are experts in nuclear contamination, nuclear decontamination, things of that nature, yes, we are the only ones, frankly. And I'm not blowing our horn. I am saying, dag nabbit, you better sound the sirens. Because, and I'm not trying to diss those in Japan, but Japan has been minimalizing the extent of the catastrophe at hand. They have.
And why do you think that is? I am reading on a CNN report that Japan has come under fire for doing just that, minimizing the extent of the danger over there. And I think they're measuring this thing, and I don't know the millisieverts.
I can barely hear you.
They're measuring the millisieverts. I don't know exactly what that is. But I'm listening, reading on the CNN report that substantiates your caption, your summary of what is going on over there, and that the water is now being contaminated and has leaked out into the Pacific Ocean. And the question is, according to this report, how did this water get out of the building? And which would be clear to me, or at least I would easily assume that, because the meltdown has actually melted through those containers and has now seeped through the ground, which I thought was the original concern when those pipes or whatever those containers are, if they were, there was a meltdown, that it would actually seep through the ground. But apparently it seeped through the ground and the water's out of the building and the water has now seeped into the Pacific Ocean. And it's, according to this report, let me just say, the measurement is more than 330 times the dose an average person in a developed country receives per year. 300 times in a developed country. So you can imagine what, I don't know what the surrounding countries are, but the view over there in the Pacific Ocean, where you have the Philippines, you have what, Malaysia, I don't know what the countries are that are close to there, but they can have some concern. Now, what I would like to know, what is going to be the signal for the other governments to get involved that have concern? Because I understood that because Japan has minimized reporting on the dangers there, that they are expecting all of this stuff to be contained within Japan. Of course, that we know that it's not beyond 20 miles that they have put their own residents in these safe zones, and that some of the older people who have stayed in their home are basically committing suicide. Or whatever the conditions that are going to exist for them, had they not left to go to these shelters that were put for them, I think they're now using like this these luxury hotels. And but my question is this: once they bust these people into these shelters or the safe zones, aren't they taking some level of radiation with them?
Okay, now okay. Getting ahead of yourself right now. Okay, in regard to the people that are, what you have, okay, when you're dealing with, and I'm going to put this in tactical terms because that's primarily where I, you know, got the majority of my training. I would consider, and this is the way we usually approach it as, if you have a situation of this nature, of this high level of an emergency, it is basically the equivalent of a nuclear explosion. The only difference is it was not where it exploded, but the contamination, the level of contamination, that area, that reactor is considered to be ground zero, okay? The same as if an atomic bomb had dropped there. That means that area right there is very, 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 very highly contaminated. You have now contamination that is disseminated via air. That most of the time, what does happen with it is when it rains, it goes to the ground and then it's on the ground and it dissipates. You know, less than right in that particular area. Airborne contamination basically, it's filtered through the environment. But when it comes to people that are on the ground that are being evacuated, you do have what's called cross-contamination. Cross-contamination is the same as, you know, you ever walk down the street and step into a pile of poo-poo? You know, you got to step on your shoe? Now, everywhere that you walk, you're walking down the sidewalk, uh-oh, I done stepped on some poo-poo. And then you're scraping that poo-poo trying to get it off your shoe, right? And so as you're walking, that poo-poo is still stuck on your shoe, but it's just being less and less, but it's still coming with you. You're still tracking it as you walk up the street. The same principle applies to when you have what you, ground contamination, because your clothes are, yes, they're contaminated, all right? The dust, okay, the dirt, all that is in your clothing, okay? It's because, hey, just like I had a house fire. My house caught on fire last month. That's why I was unable to, you know, be on your broadcast. But thankfully, everybody, you know, nobody got hurt. But my entire first floor, it was a little small fire in my kitchen. It was a short circuit thing. But they had to rip the carpet out of my entire first floor. They had to scrub down and paint my walls. I had to scrub down all of my furniture. I had to take all of my clothing and everything off of my couches, all my afghans I crochet, and all my coats in my closet, and everything to the cleaners. Because the soot, okay, the soot from that small fire permeated my entire first floor. My carpets had to be ripped up and replaced because the firefighters that came in here, when they got done in the kitchen, they tracked the soot through my entire first floor. So my carpet had soot all over it. There was soot, all of my daggone clothing and all of my furniture was covered with soot. I walked outside, I put my jacket on trying to go grab something to eat the next day. And guess what? I smelled like soot. Because it was permeated in my clothing. The same thing when it comes to particulate radiological contamination. It is in everything. And so you're going to have to either get rid of it or you're going to have to leave it in place. Point in fact, Chernobyl, they have a school in Chernobyl, because that was a little community around that reactor. If you, anybody, go ahead, Google up Chernobyl. You can see it on the web. Chernobyl, they have, that school is sitting right there. Those apartments around that reactor are right there. Everything in those apartments is still in those apartments from the day Chernobyl melted down. You know why? Because they are contaminated. They couldn't even take their Bibles with them. Everything had to be left. Because it's contaminated. The same thing, unfortunately, with the incident that is going on right now in Japan. They're going to have to basically do the equivalent of digging a great big hole and putting everything in it and covering it with concrete, because that's the only way that they can make sure that nobody wants to pick up a souvenir and take it with them.
Why are they stalling? I'll ask you two questions. Why are they stalling putting this concrete or whatever product over this to contain it? And my second question is to you, what level of concern should the average American have on the issue of nuclear potential danger?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess could you elaborate on those two things? I'd just like to hear what state of mind, what level of awareness should we be, what level of concern should Americans be with regards to our own issues, with regards to what type of nuclear threat do we have in our own country?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to address the issue about why can't they just pour concrete over it right now. You can't pour concrete over it until you have basically stopped what's called a chain reaction, okay? Because what they have is they have nuclear power plants right next to each other, okay? So this is what it means. Okay, I don't know. I smoke cigarettes. Imagine if you use one match to light a cigarette, correct? Now, imagine if you used one match to light a cigarette and put it back in the book of matches before you blew it out. What happens? The whole book of matches goes off because that book, that one match you lit is still hot. And you're going to put it back in the match book with the other three book, with the other three matches. That means you got four matches. So if you take those if you try to put concrete over those reactors and the containment vessels and everything like that, before you have not blown out that first one, now you've got all those daggone firecrackers in your pocket. That's the same as put concrete over them before it has been contained properly. It's the same as putting a daggone book of lit matches in your pocket. Because as long as that one is still smoldering and you put that book of matches in your pocket, it's going to blow your buttocks off, isn't it? So we cannot put concrete over top of anything until everything is put out or lowered to the extent that it is safe to take that step. Now, in regard to concern for the United States, we should be concerned. We should be very concerned. Japan's incident, the reason why it is so bad is because, first of all, Japan is a small island, and I don't know who planned it. I wish I could smack upside their head. But they put those nuclear power plants right there by the sea. I'm not going to say stupid because they pretty much, they did not foresee an earthquake of this magnitude. The assumption was that should something happen, they would just fall into the sea. But that is a very naive way to think about reactors and radiation, because the seawater is not going to daggone stop it. It's only going to just make the whole sea contaminated. They should not have put them there. But they're there, and we have to deal with it. In addition, it's a fault line right there as well. They never thought that the plates were going to shift this soon, but guess what? The earth, the tectonic plates, they shift on a regular basis. That's why we have earthquakes. And so should the United States be concerned? Can you say California? How many nuclear power plants do we have in California on fault lines? Yes, we should be concerned.
Okay, what are some of the threats here that we have in our country?
Excuse me?
What are some of the threats that we have here in our country?
The real threat that we have in the United States, actually, it's not as extreme as Japan, because we built ours a little bit different. Okay? We built ours a little bit different. The majority of ours are based on, they're hardened to the extent of if an atomic bomb exploded. Okay? Ours are a lot bigger, if you notice. There's more of a safety zone around them because we have more land to plan these things on. We have more land where we can go ahead and, you know, give you a safe distance away from a heavily populated area. However, it's still not, basically, we shouldn't have messed with God's rocks, in my opinion. We should have never did it. I mean, yes, radiation, you know, it helps for some stuff, but to the extent where we're trying to harness that type of energy in such a confined manner, not a good idea. Not a good idea. But it's a concern environmentally. It should be a concern. It should definitely be a concern. And everybody's gung ho about nuclear energy because it sustains itself. You know, but to be honest, guess what? Why don't you go solar? You know, why don't you ride a bicycle instead of worrying about oil and stuff like that? Because
isn't there a private industry of nuclear? This is not government. This is private industry, isn't it?
Yes.
This is private industry.
Yes.
So these plants are to generate energy for electric and all types of power sources. So the benefit to the Americans is not the benefit to the investors who have put millions of dollars into these plants. So when does the government begin to regulate on these facilities and the potential dangers that they have to the average American who have no idea sometimes even that they are in proximity to these dangers? For instance, in New York, I just recently learned there are two nuclear plants there on a fault.
Frankly, we do have what you call the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Environmental Protection Agency. However, what you must also realize, what's a cash cow for the energy for the power plants is also a cash cow for the United States government, because guess what? They have to pay taxes, don't they? And
that's correct.
The military also does use nuclear power to a certain extent for space shuttle program. We also use it in medicine, you know, for cancer and, you know, leukemia and things of that nature. We also use it for other things that are beneficial. But pretty much it's kind of like, well, we do need to use it, but the way that we use it needs to be looked at very hard. In addition, are you aware of the incident in, right now, what's going on at Fort McCall, Alabama?
No, I'm not at all.
Okay, Fort McCall in Alabama, that was Chemical Corps. That's where I trained and where I taught for a couple of years. And it's a toxic waste dump. It's been a toxic waste dump for years. Right there.
What does that mean?
What that means is all those chemical weapons, all that good stuff, that's where we trained with it. That's where we stored a lot of it. And there's a serious litigation. Well, litigation has been initiated, and an investigation has been initiated because people that live in Anniston, Alabama, since the 1950s, have had birth defects, high rates of cancer, and things of that nature. Because guess what? All those rusted, dag-on chemical weapons and things of that nature, they just dug a hole and dumped them in there, and that was it, and that was that. Got into the groundwater, got into the ecosystem and everything, and people started having deformed kids, and people started dying. And finally, now it's come to light that, oh, yeah, that stuff, that's why everybody is sick in Anniston, Alabama. So we have just got to stop mixing ammonia with bleach, in my opinion. We have a lot of things wrong here, and it's going to take a very long time to make them right, and some of them probably never will be right.
Well, how concerned should we be as average Joes here, not knowing how concerned with just the issue being put to most Americans' attention with this disaster in Japan? I think this is probably in my lifetime and most Americans, probably most people's lifetime, having Hiroshima being the only nuclear disaster or nuclear bombs that were ever dropped that I know of. What is the level of concern that the average American, how should we concern ourselves? What is it that we should be doing on this issue? Educating ourselves as to how can we address our government and assuring that they are putting the best legislation and regulations in place that these privately owned facilities that are in proximity to residential areas have the propensity to have a radiation outbreak and affect the population. What is it that we should know about this? How is it that we can protect ourselves from this?
Okay. Well, the first thing everyone should do is start paying attention to legislation and where they plan to put these type of facilities. See, one thing that really kind of gets my boxers in a bunch, so to speak, is the fact that we're building a nuclear power plant. That means all y'all gonna have jobs. That means we're gonna get to, no. You need to dag nabbit sit and think. Get involved with your city planning commissions. Ask questions. Walking around outside somewhere with a billboard is not gonna cut it. Okay? What you need to do is definitely get involved and make them show you, have them explain to you the long-term repercussions of having a facility like that in said location. It's not an issue of just saying, we don't want it. It's an issue of saying, what is going to be the long-term effects in a worst-case scenario? See, a lot of people don't think forward. They just think about what they want right now. They don't think about what's going to happen if something goes wrong later. So you need to start getting involved with, and the ones that are already here, everybody says, well, they're re-inspecting them now. Well, guess what? They should have been inspecting them before now. Okay? Example, case in point, the airport detectors now, they checked them again for talking about they had too much radiation. You know what? I'm going to tell y'all something. You know why they recalibrated those daggone detectors in the airports? They recalibrated those detectors in the airports after what happened in Japan to see who was coming back through the tarmac in the United States that had radiological contamination on them.
Have they detected any?
Yep.
Well, let me ask you one question. We have just a few minutes left, and I'm so proud to have this communication with you. You have no idea how honored I am to know you and that you have shared with us this important information. And I want to continue on with the dialogue at the level that you're able to share with us, knowing that this is a very secured area for our level of ability to report on or to share with the general public. But I want you to consider what opportunities may be made available in the future that you can come back on and talk more, because this information is going to be good, because I like to get some public forums. I think they've had a forum since the National Security Forum that I attended in Washington back in October. I think at the National Constitution Center. I believe that was one held. But I think that we need to have something a little bit more inclusive for those organizations such as the American Red Cross and some of those other organizations that relate to the community for survival and emergency preparedness. To make sure that there has been some level of training and educating that they can incorporate into some of their existing community-related training modules or forms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I'll do is on my end, I will see if I can get some contacts and whatnot and come up with some information that we could disseminate to the general public. But in the interim, what you could do, Kathy, is have them go ahead and blog you with some questions so that next time we speak, I can go ahead and obtain the information necessary to assist, if I can, when it comes to questions of the from the general public. You know.
Absolutely.
Okay. I got it, Kathy. Nice talking to you.
Well, look, I just have a few minutes left, but I didn't want to cover. There's some activities going on locally. I hope you're still listening because I definitely want you to participate if you're in the area. On Thursday, May 31st at 2 o'clock at the Independence Mall here in Philadelphia, I think it's around 4th and Market.
Mm-hmm.
5th and Market. 5th and Market, Independence Mall. We're going to have a Women's Veterans in celebration of Women's History Month.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a Women's Veterans gathering there just to kind of commemorate the role of women veterans in our history.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be receiving a citation from our local council persons, and I would definitely want you to be there to stand with us, to stand
mm-hmm.
with us, because I think that your role is very historical as a level of respect and notoriety that it deserves. We would like to take every opportunity to give that to you. I am honored that we can now begin to talk from the position of service to our country and sharing some of those key roles that women veterans play in today's military, because
mm-hmm.
we have done everything. I actually was a medic, but I did some very exciting things as a medic in the military, and I'm very proud of my service. And
mm-hmm.
I know that there are women with outstanding roles in the military who have just unsung heroes. So we're trying to get as many women as we can on Thursday, March 31st at 2 o'clock at Independence Mall on the lawn, and we're going to have a small ceremony there. If it's one person, two people, or 20 people, or 200 people, for me, this will be the first of annual programs or ceremonies that we're going to be able to incorporate into our Women's History Month celebration. And I think
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a great time to mark this time in our history.
Mm-hmm.
Women in leadership, women taking a lead in a lot of the activities that concern us and our families and our country.
Mm-hmm.
This is paramount, I think, for having some stability in our home, in our government. I think that women do play a unique role. And
mm-hmm.
for what you've done in our country, and I know there were sacrifices. I refused to work in nuclear, I think it was called NBC, nuclear, whatever the
NBC, Nuclear Biological Chemical Operations.
Right. I actually took maybe one course in that. That was part of the routine curriculum for me as a medic. But I did not want to do the specialty. I think that's what you got more involved in, the specialty in NBC. Training,
mm-hmm.
but I know
yeah.
that were many who took the sacrifice and trained to be specialists and experts in the ranks of the enlisted soldier. See, a lot of times
yeah.
I think people ask, "What was your rank?" Irregardless of your rank, your commitment to service is demonstrated by the effort that you made to do what you did to the best of your ability, whether it was enlisted as an E-2, a private, or you were a sergeant major, which is the highest rank that you can be. A warrant officer, but on the officer side, people tend to think that they knew the most. But lieutenant,
don't get me started, Kathy.
As private, and because they must like private because they had a sense of entitlement and know-it-all when they actually had not really experienced at the level with many specialists or beyond corporals who were very unique rank in the Army. They were highly respected. Corporals were highly respected because they only had five or six. If they had that many, I only knew one corporal during my reign. And people don't understand the different distinctions and the ranks and how important it is when people have signed up for these jobs that they have sacrificed in serving their country. So I just honor you. I salute you on today. And I'm hoping that we can continue on this dialogue and get the platform for community that we can begin to share the importance of having the awareness, having a level of consciousness about the existing dangers around us. When the government has not told us what this plan is or what that plan is, and that level of regulation, does that include the safety or protection? You understand what I'm saying? That they're not regulated to have to provide a safety environment for those around them, as long as they are making X amount of dollars and the environment that they're particularly connected to, the residents they visit, may be in their opinion or lack of opinion not worthy of having a good relationship. I think every community where they have any proximity to dangers from radiation, from these plants that are owned by these private energy companies or facilities, there needs to be a certain knowledge, and these companies be regulated to inform. They need to be regulated to inform these communities of what the potential dangers are, and they need to have some level of preparedness in the event of a disaster or an emergency. So
well,
I'm going
Kathy,
to close up the program. Hey, beg your pardon. You can have the final words, Louise, because we just have just a minute or two before we have to wind up. But please take a minute to give me your closing comments, please.
Okay. In closing, in regard to contamination and things of that nature, what the American people can do is they can write their congressmen and they can write the nuclear power plants directly and demand that it is full disclosure sent directly to them. If they write their congressmen and they ask them, they want to know exactly what the hazards are with a said power plant in their area, that's what you call a congressional inquiry, which means it must be responded to in approximately 10 days. That they must disclose the hazards because each one of these plants have laid in place an emergency plan in the event of something happens. And you can request a copy of it. It is just go write your congressman. In regard to anything else, like I told you, they can go ahead and email the questions to you, and we'll go ahead and get together, and I'll address the issues to the best of my ability to a certain extent, because, you know, I can't really, some things I really can't get into, but we can do this. We can work. But you got to be informed. You cannot continue to walk around here thinking everything is fine, because it's not. And as long as we walk around like idiots, they're going to treat us like idiots. But I'll be there on the 31st, and I'll touch base with you later, Kathy, but I have to really go. God bless everyone,
okay,
and hey, let's pray for Japan.
Thank you so much, Black Hawk, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Right now, I'm putting on the line Reverend Lawrence Brown. Dr. Brown, are you there?
Yes, I am. I want great service that you're doing for females everywhere, but most especially the veterans. I wanted to call you concerning the citation that Philadelphia has given for Deborah Gannett Sampson, who was the first female to enlist in the United States Army. So that will be given out this Thursday on Women's International Women's Month. And I certainly, we are the co-sponsors of this particular citation, and I hope to see all females there representing. This is in honor of all the females who have served, from Deborah Gannett Sampson to Shoshona Johnson and Jessica Lynch, who were the first females prisoners of war, all the way up to Ken Munley, that wonderful, brave, veteran police officer who saved the Fort Hill massacre. So I want to commend you and your service and everything that you're doing, and I hope to see everyone Thursday at Independence Mall at 2 p.m. for the Women's Military Day under Deborah Gannett Sampson. Hopefully you'll be there.
Absolutely, this is my plan.
Yeah. Okay, everyone is invited.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. I will make sure that my network is informed. And thank you so much for the support of women veterans and all of the work that you do for the military and the veterans of the city of Philadelphia and surrounding communities. The Muscle Pump Marines, of course, we know Dr. Brown is the president of the Philadelphia chapter, and we're grateful for the continued work and commitment he has to that organization and the groups. They have just a tremendous tremendous network there. So we have 30 seconds, and I'm going to just say thank you to all, and please check out our archived recording of this broadcast at www.nawvphilly.com. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the old broadcast, listen and hear the knowledge and the expertise on the subject of nuclear and the national security, particularly with the disaster in Japan. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
God bless you and all of those in Japan.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh,